Good afternoon and welcome to the 35th episode of the Secular Foxhole Podcast. Today we're pleased to have a returning guest. Andy Clarkson is here to talk about the Exalted Moments. Why don't I read the intro, or I'll read the intro and we'll take it from there. Andy will take it from there. All right. Years after Ayn Rand's death and decades after the publication of both Atlas Shrugged and The Objectivist Ethics, a little-known quote from her came to light. It expressed Ms. Rand's view of perhaps the most important point of Atlas Shrugged. This quote has an extraordinarily further clarifying impact upon both Ms. Rand's philosophy and psychology of self-esteem and happiness, as well as the political and literary analysis of Atlas Shrugged. We'd like our listeners to do is find the PDF and go along with us when we delve into that, which will be right now. Andy, are you there?
I'm here. Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing good.
Fine.
Thanks.
Yourself?
Andy, how are you?
Andy.
That's great. Yeah, as Blair mentioned, there's a PDF that goes along with this, and we're going to hit the points of the PDF at a very high level today and keep it short and sweet to the point. But if you go to the show notes, that there'll be a link to the PDF. So one thing before we get started, guys, before jumping into the quote, and you mentioned it's about exalted moments, Blair, that's true. It's basically, I think, a psychological concept. So I want to lay the foundation for a couple minutes on philosophy and psychology from an objectivist perspective, and then we'll dive into the quote. Does that sound all right?
Sounds great.
Okay, so let's talk about philosophy. And overall, Ms. Rand's view was that one's philosophy drives one's psychology. Okay, and if you have a rational psychology, you're going to have a better psychology and view of life. So what do these terms mean? Just a couple quotes here. One, Ayn Rand said, philosophy is the science that studies the fundamental aspects of the nature of existence. And she says, the task of philosophy is to provide you with a comprehensive view of life. And this is a base, it's a frame of reference for all your actions. And actions is a key word here, mental or physical, psychological or existential. Remember those words, psychological, existential. That's going to be the key thing here. With her philosophy, she held reason, purpose, and self-esteem. There are definitions in the PDF for that. I'm not going to go into all those. But she says these three things, reason, purpose, and self-esteem, are the supreme and ruling values of one's life. And reason and purpose are more philosophical-based. Self-esteem is more psychological. So we're seeing now that whole theme of philosophy leading to a proper psychology. So what is psychology? And again, briefly in Ms. Rand's words, it's the task of evaluating the processes of man's subconscious. That's the province of psychology. And the cognitive competence is the standard of health with regard to psychology. And let's just go through the subconscious a little bit so we understand, because that plays into this. It's the subconscious, according to Ayn Rand, is an integrating mechanism. It observes, your mind observes and makes connections, and the subconscious automates them. So, guys, when you were a baby and you were learning to walk or trying to identify what a table is, you couldn't do that the first time. But ultimately, you automatize that using your based on your experiences and your subconscious, and you're able to talk and identify objects you'd experienced before. And even as an adult, you automate things. I mean, you've been in experiences previously, and we all have, that the first time we do it, maybe something in your work area, it's hard. You've never done it before. But you do it a few more times, and it's easy. And it's like, hold my beer. I got this. So Now what comes out of this, of understanding this? One is self-esteem, right? And what Ayn Rand said is your inviolate certainty that your mind is competent to think and that you yourself are worthy of happiness. That means you're worthy of living. So there's clearly psychological aspects. And that leads to happiness, which is the successful state of life. If you think you're worthy of living and that you can take on the world, then that opens the door for the potential for you being happy. And she called happiness as the state of consciousness, which proceeds from the achievement of one's values. Now, I mentioned all these things, philosophy, psychology, reason, purpose, self-esteem, happiness, subconscious, because I think they all tie into that quote. So what we have is philosophy drives psychology, and your conscious thoughts drive integrations by your subconscious, which then automate your thoughts. And then your reason-based action and purpose and automation can develop your self-esteem and happiness. So that's the quick overlay to lay the foundation of philosophy and psychology. Any thoughts on that? Let me pause for a sec, gents.
It's a great summary and introduction to Rand's philosophy. So thanks for that, Andy. It's a great foundation.
So let's jump into the quote here, and it's about exalted moments. Now, I call exalted moments the hidden jewel of objectivism, and I also call them the milestones to self-esteem and happiness. And the reason I call them the hidden jewel is, back about 25 years ago, Dr. Michael Berliner published The Letters of Ayn Rand, and in it is a letter Miss Rand wrote to a fan. And I don't know why this quote is not, I'm going to give it here in a second, it's not bigger in objectivist circles, because objectivists should be using this quote all over the place. Social media posts, books, Ocon should be filled with it. But it's odd that it's not out there. I've been sort of publicizing it for 12 years. In the show notes is a link to exaltedmoments.blogspot.com. I started 12 years ago. We'll get to that. So here's the letter to a fan. And it starts with a discussion about when Dagny lands in Galt's Gulch and meets John. And Miss Rand states in the letter, this is a quote, "You ask me about the meaning of the dialogue on page 702 of Atlas Shrugged." And this is a famous dialogue. If you've read Atlas Shrugged, most people are fully aware of this. She quotes the dialogue. And we have Dagny saying, "We never had to take any of it seriously, did we?" she whispered. And then John Galt replies, "No, we never had to." I'm sure you guys recognize that.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. So then in the letter, Miss Rand addresses the importance of the dialogue. Now, I've condensed, it's a long letter, and the letter is in the PDF, okay? But I think I've condensed it correctly. And here's the quote. "Perhaps the most important point in the whole book," this is Ayn Rand in the letter, "most important point in the whole book, Atlas Shrugged, that one must live for the sake of such exalted moments as one may be able to achieve or experience, not for the sake of suffering. It is a matter of one's fundamental overall attitude toward life, not any one specific event," end quote. Okay? So this is Ayn Rand saying, this is perhaps the most important point of her whole, her magnus opus. So I took that seriously when I discovered this 12 years ago. I think the practical meaning here is collect exalted moments to lead to an overall pro-mind, pro-man, pro-life, pro-happiness attitude. And that one exalted moment won't do it. And this ties back to integrating and automating of concrete conscious actions. We talked about actions, that is plural actions of a lifetime, into your subconscious. And just like it takes multiple times when you were a baby to automatize walking and talking, it takes multiple exalted moments over the course of a lifetime to create and enhance one's self-esteem. Okay, now that's my take on it. I've got some background here from Ayn Rand and other objectivist psychologists and Dr. Peikoff, which support my thesis, I think. But I do want to make it clear that I'm not a philosopher, I'm not a psychologist, but I think I've put this together fairly well. And what we want to do is briefly go over my view of what exalted moments are, why they're critical to your life, how to achieve them, the impact on literary analysis of Atlas Shrugged, and the political impact of exalted moments, all at a very high level. And again, all the details in the PDF. So
yeah, go for it.
Okay, so what are exalted moments? Let's look at what exalted means. It means it's a high rank or position of great importance, full of great joy and happiness. For example, "I feel exalted and newly alive." That's from the Oxford Dictionary. Mm-hmm. My take is, and it's not a definition, but it's kind of a description. An exalted moment is a concrete event in which one gains, keeps, or recognizes a significant value. You can, in your mind, recall that specific event which you achieve through your volitional action. We're going to keep hearing about action. The result of repeated exalted moments in your life is the automatization of one's self-esteem and the ability to pursue and earn one's happiness. Now, I mentioned about automatization before. Again, as a child, you automated identifying objects. You automated walking. The same thing. Over time, you grow your self-esteem through exalted moments, these great moments in your life. So it takes time. And notice that I said significant value. Going out and getting an ice cream cone can be a value. It can be a joyful moment, but it's not a significant value. And it's not like hippie moments of like, hey, man, be happy. You know, it's not it's something significant in your life. For example, my girlfriend, Tara, she got the job of her lifetime 4 years ago. All her education and career experiences came together in this position. And we celebrated it because it was a great moment. And we went out to dinner and there was no budget on the dinner. Right? Because we wanted to celebrate it. So that was an exalted moment for her getting that job. And we had to concretize it. So we celebrated it. It didn't pass as, oh, I got a new job today. I got a paper route today. No, this was great. So they're concrete and they can come from many areas. Your career, your gaining of a romantic partner, experiences with a romantic partner, significant values gained through friendship, or maybe just through personal interest. So if you look in the PDF, I did quote, and I'm not going to go through them here, two quotes from Ayn Rand's novels. One from Atlas Shrugged, the great train ride scene, right? On the Jaltgaunt line over the Reardon Metal Bridge, that scene. And then the great scene at the end of The Fountainhead with Dominique rising in the elevator, and she's rising up above the buildings to meet Howard Roark. And both those moments are spine-chilling, and they make me very emotional when I read them. I'm not going to go through them here, but they're in the PDF, and I really suggest that people read them. So I'm going to move on to why they are important to you guys. Any questions, anything striking you at this time?
Well, again, I appreciate the contrast, if you will, between like an instant gratification and how an egoist should approach, you know, these ideas. You understand?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we all, you know, we can go to a party. We can, you know, just. You
sure.
Know,
those, yeah.
Go to a party Saturday night and have a great time and great conversation and great food and you love the people. But that's not really an exalted moment. That's maybe a great period of joy. It's like the concept of Ayn Rand's happiness. It's not range of the moment. It is an overall, as she said in her quote, it's an overall lifelong course of a lifetime, right? Yes. It's overall attitude towards life, not one specific event. So,
but Andy, that party, for example, that could be, for example, that aha moment to come up with this new ice cream flavor that later on will be a huge success and building your business, for example. If you cherish that moment and remember it and maybe write it down in a notebook or something like that and continue on that.
Yeah, and that moment of that coming up with that idea, and then and this is where action comes in.
Yeah.
But you've made that ice cream business a success, and then you know it's a success, and you've hit a certain goal or landmark, that would be an exalted moment when you've realized, you know, that you've gained that significant value. But you can look back at that moment when you came up with
doing
that.
Doing the first batch of Reardon Metal, for example.
Yeah, exactly. The first batch where it was successful, where he worked for 10 years trying to come up with Reardon Metal, right? I think that was 10 years. Okay. And then he made the bracelet, right? Mm. And gave it to his wife who rejected it, I think, and then gave it to Dagny ultimately. But yes, that moment of success, like, wow, I knew I could do this, or I was pretty darn confident I could do it. And he went and did it. But he took action, and we're going to keep hearing about action. So, okay.
Yeah.
So let's jump into why exalted moments are important to you. Okay. Fundamentally, we each have a choice. The fundamental choice is to live or die, right? And to truly live as a human requires a specific understanding. In Ayn Rand's nonfiction. She used the term survival repeatedly in her works, and it would be easy to assume that she meant, you know, subsistence survival or existential survival or just physically or biologically. But in her writing, she was very clear about achieving a human form of survival. Let me give you a quote here, a couple quotes from Ayn Rand on this, because I know this is stuff that's deeper and people may not have seen all this.
It is crucial, yes.
She says, to the extent that a man is guided by his rational judgment, so now we're getting back to philosophy, right, mm-hmm. and using reason, he acts in accordance with the requirements of his nature, and to that extent, he succeeds in achieving a human form of survival and well-being. To the extent he acts irrationally, he acts as his own destroyer. And what she says is that, you know, we should gain or keep values in order to survive as a human. She, quote, values are the motivating power of man's actions and a necessity for his survival. So there's that survival word again. But she ends it with, for his survival psychologically as well as physically. Okay, so mm-hmm. now, remember I pointed out in the beginning about psychological and existential?
Yes.
So this is where the psychological part comes in from Miss Rand. Here's a quote, another quote. Man's emotional, and that's emotional is tied to psychology, mechanism works as the barometer of the efficacy or impotence of his actions. If severe and prolonged enough, the absence of a normal active flow of value experiences may disintegrate and paralyze man's consciousness by telling him that no action is possible. The form in which man experiences the reality of his values is pleasure. So if you're not getting psychological value from your actions, just biological, existential, right, then that's not enough. We are humans. We're not, you know, animals, wild animals out in the jungle. We need psychological values. And as she said, by telling him that no action is possible, well, fellas, if you view that no action is possible, what's the consequence of that?
Well, you fail to act.
Yeah. And if no action is possible, then no life is possible, right? Mm-hmm. So psychological values are critical to human survival. Dr. Peikoff in OPAR, in his happiness chapter and in the subsection, Sex is Metaphysical, and we're going to talk about sex here in a couple minutes, but he makes the point, and I won't go through the quotes, but he gave an example of, you know, you could be a caveman living in a cave, gnawing on a bone of a brontosaurus or whatever, not really, but, you know,
yeah, something. Okay.
And you can get the nutritional needs for your survival. You can get the existential value, but we're humans and we don't eat in a cave alone. We enjoy going out with our romantic partner and with our friends out to a nice restaurant. And I'm paraphrasing his paragraph here, or just with your romantic partner. You're in your dining room and you're just having a bowl of stew, was his example, and a glass of wine. It's not just the nutritional value, the existential value you're getting from that meal. It's the psychological value, the pleasure, the joy, the happiness you're getting with being from, you know, with your romantic partner. That's the psychological part.
Yeah.
And so Ayn Rand put this together beautifully. Here's another quote from her that she says, that ties all this together. The maintenance of life and the pursuit of happiness are not two separate issues. To hold one's own life as one's ultimate value and one's own happiness as one's highest purpose are two aspects of the same achievement. Existentially, the activity of pursuing rational goals is the activity of maintaining one's life. Psychologically, its result and reward is an emotional state of happiness. And as we said, we need that psychological value to keep going on. So my view is pursue exalted moments to earn your happiness and self-esteem. Exalted moments are concrete milestones on your road to self-esteem, to happiness, and your life, your survival as a human. So let's pause there, because that was a lot, I think.
Yeah. And Andy, when we're pausing, because you said this is so important, and now you are building up for this exalted moment coming. And when you see, why is, for example, that Maslow is more, you know, famous or heard about
than
other psychologists? Because this is what Randy is doing here, creating this. And as you said, this important quote, could it be some allies with Rand, or is she truly unique here?
I think she, now again, I'm no expert in psychology, but I think there was, she may have addressed, and I'm going into the memory banks here, fellas. I think she talked about Maslow, and Maslow had a hierarchy, basically saying you need your basic needs first, food, shelter, clothing, and then you need to get money, and then you need to move up, and then you can enjoy the fine things in life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Rand, I think it was her or some other objectivist, disagreed and said, no, you cannot go through life, you know, the first 20, 30, 40 years of your life just focusing on existential values. That makes your life miserable. You need existential values, but you need, this is where the importance of art comes in also. Mm-hmm. Art has a psychological impact, but all these other things, sure, make money from your career. That's hugely important, but also have exalted moments in your career. Love your career. And if you don't love your career, get out of your career. Find a romantic partner, somebody who you share values with, and gain exalted moments and happiness and self-esteem from that person, your friends and family, your personal interests. You know, Ayn Rand loves stamp collecting. I don't know if she got exalted moments out of those, but she certainly gained pleasure.
So. When she got this, you know, the missing one.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's right.
You're right. You're,
and somebody right. that valued her and traded with her and said, I see that you're missing that stamp. Here it is.
Well, you're right. And that may have been an exalted moment for her. Sure. So the point is that Maslow, he had a hierarchy. I think Ayn Rand would disagree with that hierarchy. And she says, you need both of them. The maintenance of life and the pursuit of happiness are not separate issues. One's not important, more important than the other. You need both of them. So that's the importance. And she, I would guess, stands alone or with very few others in understanding that.
That's probably where she thought the integration of philosophy and psychology would begin, maybe, if that's...
Yeah, did your actions, your thought-based actions, your reason-based actions, your purpose-based actions lead to self-esteem? And my view is her concept of exalted moments are on that pathway, right? Because it may take years or decades to really develop a full self-esteem. Then you can gain it gradually over time. My view is that exalted moments are concrete milestones you can point to, and you automatize your self-esteem. You earn it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we've talked about the quote. We've talked about my view of what exalted moments are based on what Ayn Rand said. We've talked about the importance of those. So the question is, how do you achieve them? And I'm going to keep this really high level. One recommendation, you all obviously know Dr. Harry Binswanger.
Yes.
He published the Objectivist Forum back in the 1980s. I have all the individual copies of that, and I've got the bound version also. The links I sent you guys, and I can resend them if you want. I recommend people buy that bound version of the Objectivist Forum. There's so much good stuff in there, and there's several articles by Dr. Ed Locke on psychology, and also Dr. Edith Packer. And I quote from those articles in the PDF. So again, go back to the PDF, but definitely get yourself a copy of the Objectivist Forum compilation. I'm not going to go through all of Dr. Locke's stuff here and Dr. Packer's stuff here, but I'm going to provide a couple quotes to back up my thesis here.
And Andy?
Yes.
They have published a book together.
Oh, Locke and Packer. Yeah, I think they did. Yeah. What was that book?
It was actually Edith Kenner.
Kenner, yes. Kenner, I meant. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, this is Dr. Edith Packer.
Yeah.
Packer. Yeah. Okay. So here's Dr. Locke from the Objectivist Forum in October of 1982. Ayn Rand has demonstrated that self-esteem is psycho-epistemological self-confidence. And I think what he means, psychoepistemology, that's in your automatic response. So that gets back to automization and the subconscious. It is earned through consistent rationality and by acting on the basis of one's judgment. So you can't just sit and say, I'm a rational guy. I think things through. I know everything. No, you have to take action to earn your self-esteem. He says right here, self-esteem, this is Dr. Locke still, self-esteem cannot be earned by acting by thought alone, but only by thought applied to action. Yes, sir. So here's some thoughts from Dr. Edith Packer. Her article, it was a talk that she gave and that she published it. It's the psychological requirements of a free society. And we'll get into this when we get to the politics. But she says about a particular requirement of human life, a requirement that is particularly psychological, the individual's sense of personal identity. A person has a strong sense of identity when he knows what he thinks and values in the important areas of his life and continues to pursue such values in action. So we have all this, you know, consistency here. I know who I am. It's summed up in I know who I am. Now, she mentioned, here's another quote from Packer. This leads to the political part we'll get to shortly. A strong sense of personal identity leads to the individual becoming self-responsible. And that, in turn, increases the likelihood he will want to live in a free society. And I'm going to have some comments on that. But I mentioned the four key areas. Dr. Packer mentions those areas, career, romance, friends and family, leisure, personal interests. And there's all kinds of – she has all these steps to how to establish your own identity and to attain the values in those areas. Too much to go into here. Follow along in the PDF and, again, buy the Objectivist Forum. So I do want to finish with one topic, and I mentioned it earlier, and it is sex. And Dr. Peikoff wrote about sex, as I mentioned, and I'm going to spend about 30 seconds going through this because this ties into exalted moments. Sex in Ayn Rand's identification, this is Peikoff, is a celebration of oneself and of one's existence. It is a celebration of one's power to gain values of the world in which one gains them. Sex, therefore, is a form of feeling happiness, but from a special perspective. Sex is the rapture of experiencing emotionally two interconnected achievements, self-esteem and the benevolent universe conviction. And you can look up, you go to AynRandLexicon.com, you can look up benevolent universe. Peikoff continuing. Sex is a unique form of answering the supreme question of a volitional being. Can I live? Now, remember, that was one of the key points of getting a self-esteem. You were saying to yourself, rationally and in reality, I am worthy of living. Well, sex is a major part of that. The man of self-esteem, using cognitive conceptual terms, concludes in his own mind the answer is yes. When he makes love, he knows that yes, without words, as a passion coursing through his body. Sex is a physical capacity in the service of a spiritual need. It reflects no man's body alone, nor his mind alone, but their integration. And, of course, the mind's the ruling factor. So that's that. So what I say is this has been what exalted moments are, why you need them, how to get them. And what I say to you guys and to all your listeners, may you earn exalted moments and may you earn great sex.
Yeah. And that you also find in Rand's literature.
Yes, you will find great sex in her literature, yes.
and that's a statement, because I want to do this before you enter, you know, and you have laid the ground here, foundation. Yeah. In the political era, and I saw you did a shout out to us on our timelines and so on Facebook regarding the so-called conservative movements and the politicians and how they want to jump into the bedrooms of people's lives. So please say something about that, like a comment, and then get into the political arena.
Okay, well, let's talk about conservatives a little bit. Okay, you're going to get me going here, but let me.
That's why I asked.
Yeah, okay. And this ties in actually to our last couple episodes we did together. So
we can integrate this.
So here's Dr. Packer again from the – so we're now in the political implications of exalted moments. And more backup of my thesis here, that Dr. Packer concludes from the psychological requirements of a free society, her talk, her article, a person with a strong sense of identity will have what I call the psychological metaphysics for happiness. He is equipped and motivated to succeed. He is shooting for large goals. He is shooting for his happiness. He normally does not have to live in fear of disaster or fear that he will starve. He thinks in terms of his future and therefore providing for possible illness or his old age, and that's a responsibility he assumes as a matter of course. I think such a person would welcome the freedom to be able to use his abilities and to provide for himself. Now, here's the thing. We've talked about, and I wrote a book about this, about we need a culture of reason. And Ayn Rand wrote about, you know, the epistemology of reason. You need that in a culture before you can get to capitalism, right? And that's from the philosophical perspective. What Packer is saying here is that this has to be a psychological issue also, because you guys think that you have a culture of people lacking self-esteem and who live in fear and who are not able to, as Packer described here, you know, have the psychological metaphysics for happiness and who are shooting for large goals. Do you think those kind of people would ever choose freedom, individual rights, capitalism, liberty? No.
No, they don't.
They don't, because they live in fear. They want a safety net. They want somebody to take care of them, and they don't have the self-esteem. And that's where exalted moments, I think, come in, again, as the milestones to your self-esteem. When she says, shoot for large goals, when Packer says, he is shooting for large goals, well, when you achieve those goals, you celebrate an exalted moment. That's my take. Now, my view is, objectivists, stop focusing so much on politics. Focus on reason, purpose, and self-esteem in your life. Focus on gaining exalted moments in your life. Sex and the rest of it will follow.
Here, here.
Here, here. Now, I do want to tie this into Martin's question about, and I've got more to say about the conservatives here. Dr. Peikoff had his dim hypothesis, right?
Yes, yes.
And if I have this right, you know, his view is, yes, the left is nihilist. They're on the march. They seem indestructible. But his view is they're so nihilistic that people will turn away from them and they will seek. People need a morality and not just destruction in their lives. And that in his view was that religion would ultimately rise out of that. Now, hopefully there's a third player in this, and it's called objectivism. But in the absence of objectivism rising, that religion, because people want a morality, and that's the only morality that people know for the most part. And that's, I think, explains why we're seeing the rise of these creatures like Jordan Peterson and Dennis Prager. And what we see is some objectivists debating what I think is the modern day version of the debate of the number of angels on the head of a pin. And that is, and you, some of your recent guests have been engaged in this, that the right is better than the left. So objectivists have to support Trump and conservatives. And another one of your guests was Andrew Seidel, was right on the mark. He pointed out the rise of Christian nationalism.
Right.
But I think objectivists should be objectivists, be radicals for reason and for self-esteem, and seek exalted moments. Don't focus on the politics. I think what's happening here, and we talked about this in the other show, that I think many objectivists, or most probably, came from conservative backgrounds, and there are those conservative strains, those conservative premises within them. And they are not seeking exalted moments. They're living in fear of the left. And they are running to some degree, to the Jordan Petersons and the Dennis Pragers instead of to exalted moments. And it's aligning with, to some degree, because these objectivists aren't going fully religion, but it's an indication that Peikoff is correct about people needing morality, and people will head towards religion, even people who know, who should know better.
Yeah, and that's why, and we will do this wrap up, and that's why one of my favorite movies, also the favorite movie, is Chocolat.
Oh, yes.
It concretizes it so well. During Lent, when somebody has an exalted moment, mother and daughter coming to a new town,
yep,
and village, and open a chocolaterie during Lent. And then,
yes,
this force, he's both a mayor and taking care of a church, having this duel, and then, yes, you know, what's the climax and so on, and how it's ending. But I think that's so, because, as you said, this strains, and people are brought up this way and still could have it in them.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to pointed that out, and you do it so so well when you say the leftist nihilists, so they will self-destruct in a way, and the other ones could say that we have the answer, we have a morality ethics, and the crutch.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to put that in there. So thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you guys want to hear about the literary analysis and the impact of exalted moments on the literary analysis of Atlas Shrugged?
Yes, by all means.
So you guys remember about 10, 12 years ago, there was the financial crisis, right?
Sure.
And there was Obamacare and the banks collapsing and housing prices collapsing. And Atlas Shrugged during that window was selling several million copies a year.
Yes.
And that was great. But out of that came two views of Atlas Shrugged, which philosophically lined up from where the, from their sources. One from conservatives and one from libertarians. And as we know, conservatives are to a great degree mystics of spirit. And accordingly, their view of Atlas Shrugged was mystical. Do you recall their view at all?
Offhand, I don't.
Well, it was in general that the primary purpose of Atlas Shrugged is that it is prophetic.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Ayn Rand was a prophet.
The savior will come.
Yeah. Yes. And she was a prophet who saw all this coming. Now, we can't deny that there are definite predictive aspects of Atlas Shrugged. Ayn Rand saw the trend and these things that collapses like this would happen. And so, to some respect, you know, they're correct. She did predict many things, but yep, that's not the main thing. What we have here are mystic Christian conservatives simply going the only way they can. Miss Rand was a prophet, and, you know, that's missing the point.
Yeah.
And then the second one was from the libertarians, and, you know, we know that she condemned libertarians as hippies of the right, basically for their know-nothing skeptical view of philosophy. They are, to a great degree, mystics of muscle. They ignore knowledge. They dismiss metaphysics, epistemology, ethics, and they basically say, well, you know, liberty is axiomatic. It's obvious. It doesn't need to be argued. People should just know. And that's not the case. No. So do you remember the phrase going galt?
Yes.
Mm.
That came from the libertarians. And the implication of that phrase is that the predominant message of Atlas Shrugged is to go on strike against the world. I mean, you saw these guys saying, oh, Obama's president, where we should all go on strike. And, of course, the strike is a major plot element, right? That's,
yes,
what's happening. These great, without giving away too much, I'll stop there, but it's a major part of it. But it's not the predominant message, but this is perfectly aligned with libertarianism, ignorant or disdainful of the fundamental aspects of philosophy by treating concrete politics as fundamental. So these two views of this great literary masterpiece are in clear opposition to what Ayn Rand said. And I'm going to rack back to that quote, that one must live for the sake of such exalted moments as one may be able to achieve or experience, that the essence of life is the achievement of joy, not the escape from pain. That is directly from Ayn Rand, who said perhaps this is the most important message of Atlas Shrugged. And exalted moments needs to become more of a known concept in objectivism.
Thanks, Andy, for putting the light on this jewel. Could you repeat where the listeners could find Rand's letter?
If you go to Amazon.com, there's a book called The Letters of Ayn Rand. It was compiled by Dr. Michael Berliner, published in 1997, still available, I think, hardback and paperback, and it is on pages 583 to 584.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for that, because then we will do, if you want to support our work here and our show and bringing great guests like Andy, you will be able to click on that link to Amazon, and we will get some proceeds from that through a referral system. So thanks for that, Andy.
Sure, absolutely.
Very good. I'm going to throw this in just at the tail end because there recently was another Prager University show. This young gentleman, a young Catholic named Michael Knowles, he hosted Eric Daniels, talked about Atlas Shrugged. Michael kept hammering, but she's an atheist, but she's an atheist.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I didn't know that, guys.
But Eric didn't say what I would have said. I would have said, atheism is such a minor aspect of her philosophy that it doesn't make any difference. What she is for is to use your mind, to think for yourself, to be an advocate of reason, to live by reason.
Yeah.
He failed to answer this.
I know that that interview exists. I did not watch it. I really was not interested. But, you know, that was an opportunity to talk about, you know, first of all, what is atheism? It means and it's just an absence. Doesn't say what you are. You can be a communist. We talked about, you know, in other shows, I think, about communists or atheists, but sure, we're not communists.
We're secular. That doesn't mean we're communists.
Yeah. So what does she stand for? Like you said, well, she stands for reason in the realm of philosophy and exalted moments in the realm of psychology. But it's a shame that people, and I think this is fear-based again. This is getting back to your question, Martin, that I think there are people still with conservative strains. They're living in fear. They see the left coming. The left is dangerous. I'm not minimizing the danger of the left. It is huge. Yeah,
it's wide open.
They are relentless. Here's the thing. The left is relentless. Take this in context, but I admire them. They keep going. They go through scandals. They go through troubles. They go through whatever. They don't quit. They are marching forward. And what I don't see is radicals for reason, radicals for exalted moments. I see people living in fear. I see people saying, objectivists saying, oh, well, today's right, meaning the conservatives, are better than the left. So we have to support Donald Trump. We have to support the conservatives. No, we should be supporting our ideas. Objectivists should be relentless in condemning the Bidens of the world and the Trumps of the world and the Pragers of the world and laying out this philosophy and psychology of objectivism. And it's a shame what you described happened in that interview with Eric. It's weak. It's not relentless. It's caving,
yes,
if I understand you correctly.
And well, that's what I came away with, yeah.
Yeah, and Blair, we will do that, and talking a bit like a devil's advocate now, we will do that as a thing so the listeners could make up their own mind, and we'll include that, and, you know, we could have a follow-up there. And the battle there of ideas is interesting, how we could do it in different ways. And I, again, appreciate your work and how you're doing it. That's why I put that, you know, if you want to support our work and your work, read, go to the source, read it, and make up your own mind. And then you could come back on the show, or you could, you know, comment or start your own podcast. Mm-hmm. So we are all for that, as long as we have, freedom of expression. And that's what I see the dangers of. We are now in the foxhole, religious, that they want to, you know, shut you down because some views are not so-called legit according to their views. And you have a whole woe on the other side. And then you have, as you said, the libertarians that everything goes. So we could keep on working here. So
that's right. Thank you, Andy.
Pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me again. I hope you enjoyed it, and look forward to working with you guys in the future.
Yes. Well, we've been talking with Andy Clarkson, author and the new intellectual. Andy, thanks again for manning the foxhole with us.
Take care, fellas.
Bye-bye. Thanks.